Hello, welcome to the Psychology of Attractiveness podcast. I'm Rob Burris. In this episode, in a belated attempt to understand the results of the recent US elections, we harness the power of attractiveness psychology to find out if we vote for candidates based on their voices, and to see if party political preference is linked to our sexual behaviour. Now, I know I promised you an episode on sex and drugs this month, but in the light of the recent US election, I've decided to put that episode back until just before Christmas. This month, I want to talk about some new research on voting, and hopefully we can get to the bottom of this massive catastrophe we've all found ourselves inhabiting. Anyway, depending on your ideological outlook, 2016 has either been a great year for politics, or the year that the hopes and dreams of all sensible citizens were dashed to smithereens. The Brexit referendum, which set the UK on course to leave the EU, was followed by Donald Trump's unexpected victory in the US presidential election. Front National leader Marine Le Pen is riding high in the polls for the next French president, and right-wing politicians across Europe are feeling more confident about their chances in upcoming contests. How do we make sense of what can seem, at times, like a worldwide political earthquake? Many commentators have called on liberals to reach out to their more conservative peers to make a greater effort to understand why men like Trump or women like Le Pen are so popular. Maybe liberals and conservatives need to get to know each other better and develop a deeper insight into what makes each group tick. There are many differences between a typical right and left-wing voter, including attitudes about economics, immigration, military spending, and state intervention in business. Many journalists have speculated how each of these differences in attitudes and values may have swayed voters in this year's most consequential elections. But this is a podcast about the psychology of human mating behaviour, and so, today, we'll investigate whether conservatives and liberals differ not only in the voting booth, but in the equally private confines of their bedrooms. Research in the UK in the 1970s showed that social conservatives are less sexually permissive, perhaps as we might expect. But it also revealed that supporters of the Conservative Party reported more satisfying sex lives and higher libidos. The psychologist who conducted this research, Hans Eysenck, admitted that his results should be considered provisional until more data were in. In the last month, those data finally arrived after a 40-year wait. Peter Hatemi of Penn State University led a team of political scientists in a new study of political orientation and the whole gamut of sexual behaviour, and published his results in the journal Personality and Individual Differences. Over 1,000 US-based men and women completed a barrage of questionnaires on their political values and sexual behaviour. They answered questions on their attitudes about military spending, drone strikes, tax rates, environmental protection, healthcare, drug legalisation and euthanasia, among many other topics. Questions about sex included items on the frequency with which participants engaged in various sexual behaviours, the riskiness of their sexual behaviour, and their total number of sexual partners. Because of the personal nature of the questions, any discussion of the results of this study must be accompanied by a content warning. So if you don't want to hear about anal sex, masturbation, and sex toys, then... oh. Whoops, it's already too late. Hatemi and colleagues ran scores of analyses to find out whether various sexual behaviours predicted political attitudes. Reading an exhaustive list of every result would be as interminable as a lovemaking session with tantric pop megastar Sting, and literally nobody wants that. But here are some of my favourite findings. People who give or receive more oral sex tend to be more socially liberal, for example, supporting gay rights. But they also tend to be more conservative on out-group punishment attitudes. That is, they're more anti-immigration and pro-death penalty. out-group punishment attitudes are also stronger among those who enjoy doggy-style sex. More frequent masturbation is associated strongly with liberal attitudes across the board, as is the use of sex toys. Those who partake in S&M are more likely to have voted for Obama in 2012. Those who engage in more mouth-to-breast contact, yes, they really did ask about that, voted in greater numbers for Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney. People who more frequently touch others' genitals or have their own genitals touched by others are more conservative on all measures. All, that is, except for attitudes to national security. In a victory for fans of irony everywhere, those who like to touch and be touched thought warrantless searches were a real passion killer. Infidelity and sex while under the influence are more common among those with liberal national security and social attitudes. And those who have contracted a sexually transmitted infection were more likely to have voted for Obama. However, conservatives were more likely to have paid for sex. Finally, Hatemi and colleagues replicated ISENC's finding from the UK. Those who are more satisfied with their sex lives are more likely to be conservative, and conservatives report having a lot more sex than liberals, although with fewer partners. Many of these findings are certainly amusing, but are they any more than that? We can't know for sure whether sexual behaviours cause political attitudes, any more than we can say that political attitudes cause sexual behaviours. Besides, isn't talk of sex frivolous when we're trying to come to terms with important election results? Hatemi and colleagues disagree. In their paper, they say, quote, "Pundits often decry the public's obsession with sex over substance without realising that sex is substance. Electoral campaigns orchestrated around sexual topics are not organised solely for purposes of voyeurism or entertainment, but rather align with individual self-interest. While some may claim such a strategy appeals to the lowest common denominator, it exists precisely because the interest in personal sexual experience is near universal." Unquote. This has rarely been more true than in this most recent US election, where one candidate was accused by multiple people of committing sexual assault, and where one of the dividing lines between the Democratic and Republican nominees was again on the subject of abortion. Politics is inextricably entwined with sex, so if we want to understand political decision-making, it makes sense to investigate behaviours in the bedroom too. And, if nothing else, it certainly beats poring through reams of unemployment figures and immigration estimates. I think I'll leave that to the real eggheads. We like to think that we vote for our preferred political candidates because we share their vision, or at least because they're the least rotten apple in a barrel of apples so putrid they wouldn't think twice about appointing an alt-right Jonagold to the transition team of a rancid Cox's Orange Pippin. I mean, that is a laboured metaphor. Anyway, science has revealed that we're less discerning than we'd like to think. Research I was involved with almost 10 years ago showed that we can predict the results of democratic elections based purely on the facial appearance of party leaders. And those of you who are long-time listeners to my podcast will have heard my 2015 interview with political scientist Casey Klofstad, in which we discussed Casey's research on voice pitch and electability. Casey had found that deepening a person's voice using computer software makes that person seem stronger and more competent, valued traits in a political leader. However, new research by Irina Pavela-Banai and her colleagues from the University of Zadar in Croatia takes this research one step further. The scientists wanted to know if this lab-based preference of hypothetical voters for hypothetical candidates with deeper voices translated into real-world behaviour. Do deeper-voiced politicians really win more elections? First, Pervela Banai made a list of all the presidential elections held across the world between 2006 and 2016. She excluded elections in which the president was elected by parliament, for example, places like Greece, and also excluded elections that featured female candidates, since there were so few that analysis of the results would have been difficult. Next, she searched YouTube for videos of each of the candidates speaking. She collected voice samples for 51 pairs of presidential candidates representing 50 different countries. The researchers discovered that candidates with deeper voices were more likely to win their elections. Furthermore, winners who received a larger share of the popular vote tended to have deeper voices than winners whose victory was narrower. What these results can't tell us is whether these candidates won their elections because of their deep voices. Perhaps deep-voiced candidates look different to candidates with high voices. We know this is likely to be true because deep voices have been shown to be associated with larger bodies. Or it may be the case that people with deeper voices use words that matches their manly voices and makes them come across as a stronger leader. Also, given that Pervela Banai only tested videos of men, her research can't explain the outcome of the recent US presidential election, in which a woman, Hillary Clinton, faced off against Donald Trump, a shaved orangutan. More research is needed if we're ever going to understand primate politics in all its myriad forms. Okay, that's all for this month. Until next time, when I'll definitely be talking about sex and drugs, thank you for listening. You can keep up with all the research on, well, not all of it, but a lot of it, by following me, Robert Burris, on Twitter. Oh, by the way, if you want to hear that episode of the podcast where I talk to Casey Klofstad about his research on voices and voting, you can find that episode if you go to the blog. If you go to psychologyofattractivenesspodcast.blogspot.com, I think we'll get you there. Or you can just search for the name of the podcast and you'll get there. You know, it's the internet, mate. You know how it works. And the episode is the one for the 6th of October 2015. And in fact, I've talked about politics loads on the podcast before, and you can find all of those episodes by going to the blog and clicking on the tag for, I think it's voting. You find loads of good stuff. Okay, that's all for this time. Have a good next month, and I will see you in December. Okay.